Joe Biden, rubbing elbows and making friends at the G7 summit over in the UK. But on the home front, threats to American democracy have not disappeared. Ed Blakely is a former Washington insider now living in Sydney, Australia. My name is Sean Britton from the radio station 2SER. Find us each and every week wherever you find good podcasts at US of Ed, as well as on Facebook and Twitter. I've been trying to push this stuff to the end of our conversations, Ed, but this is pretty damning stuff. Revelations this week, Donald Trump used the Justice Department to spy on political enemies, Democratic reps and journalists while in office, as well as pushing the department to find some way of overturning the 2020 election. William Barr appears complicit in these investigations. It's being called Nixon on stilts and steroids by former Nixon counsel John Dean. Any thoughts?
Can you impeach someone who's already been impeached twice? The thing that is startling to me is how culpable the Justice Department is in all this. The Justice Department doesn't work for the president. It works for the people of the United States. And it means that the corruption in the Justice Department has to be rooted out before anything else can happen. And I hope the House and Senate go after this. And a number of senators, of course, will go along with this because they're in the crosshairs on this one too. Because if they're not careful, Joe Biden could turn around and do the same thing. Not to say that they anticipate that, but clearly, if you give this much room to the department that's in charge of basically upholding the laws of the United States, much like what happened in Germany, you have given away your democracy.
I mean, this is at the core of the issue. I'll speak more on that in a moment, but Mitch McConnell, he's moved quickly to attempt to block investigations. In terms of rooting out that corruption and the consequences thereof, what might we expect to see? Are we likely to see, in this kind of scenario, arrests, jail time for some of the perpetrators?
I don't know, because who's going to investigate them? Clearly, you'd have to have, I guess, an outside counsel, because the Justice Department can't investigate the Justice Department. Now, there's a thing called the Inspector General, and that office has a lot of power, as we saw with the events in the first impeachment. They're the ones that turned in the president regarding the quid pro quo and that discussion. So they would have the first action, but you still have to have investigators beyond that to lay the grounds for prosecutions. I anticipate a number, I don't know how many, of senior people will be resigning from the Justice Department pretty soon, because they certainly don't even want their names in the paper under these circumstances. They'd never get a law job anywhere in the world. But this stench is very deep. It goes into the very fabric of this very essential institution. This is almost like the Supreme Court had rats in it. How you root this out is unclear to me. You could certainly, well, you can't impeach Barr, but you could bring him up for an impeachment trial and arrest him for malfeasance, for failing to do his constitutional responsibilities. Although he says he wasn't briefed on this, if his office was doing it, who gave the order?
And just getting back to what you mentioned before about giving away the democracy. Look, Mitch McConnell, as I say, is looking to block these investigations into Trump already. He's also come out and said this week, if Republicans, or he's just about said that if Republicans were to gain power in the Senate in 2022, they would keep any Biden appointees out of the Supreme Court the same way he did to Obama in Obama's last year of office.
Well, they better move quickly. Buy her out of league right now.
Look, Republicans are not willing to come to the table on any negotiations. They continue to espouse Trump's big lie about the stolen election. They continue to attempt to keep millions of Americans from voting. I don't mean to belabor this, but look, I know you'll say they're not winning any voters with these kind of actions, but for all we talk about what Biden's doing, we're a few electoral votes in America from having a purely authoritarian, purely anti-democracy party in charge. And that's very concerning.
It's disconcerting. It's definitely disconcerting. And it's not over. It's really scary. I'm not sure where we turn, but we have to turn someplace. We really need Biden to stay in two terms to clean all this up. It can't be done in one, and we need a clean house in the Senate. This is very deep and very dangerous.
Well, look, it's not going to be a problem resolved overnight, so we will look at the news of the week. Speaking of Biden, he has been meeting with other world leaders at the G7 summit over in the UK. I'm sure he'd like them to forget about Trump too. How successful has he been at sending the message, America's back?
I think he's just sent it. It seems to me the message is very, very clear. America's back and people are loving it. They were scared before. Much more frightened than I realized, deeply afraid of what was going on in the United States. It's as though your dad left home and left the kids without any clothes, without any food or any direction, and they're starved to have daddy back again.
Good news for the climate, bad news for, I think, Australian leadership and perhaps Australian exports. G7's leaders have pledged to end support for coal-fired power stations. A bit of a sting, perhaps, for Scott Morrison. Other climate pledges, obviously, on show as well. What do you make of them, Ed?
Well, I don't think this is going to hurt Australia much. Most of our coal we're sending out now is for steel and iron ore and so forth, higher quality coal. The low steaming coal for power plants isn't in use here. You can't burn it in Australia, and you certainly can't burn it in China anymore. I understand you can actually see the sun in Beijing. So things are changing there rapidly. We will still make a lot of money on quality coal, no mistake about it. We will make more money on nickel and rare earths because they will go into batteries. And a new battery technology, if we're smart, we're going to be in the front of this. Instead of just sending out the minerals for China and the US to make batteries, we will make them here. I hope to heck we've learned a good lesson from all this. The way our farmers are making it now is they're sending out, like you and I get, packaged foods. The restaurants had to close down. They had to learn how to package stuff up and send it out as the other stores have done. And so we're moving up the food chain, literally, and providing more packaged goods. Our wines will start going to Europe. That'll be stiff competition, but it means we'll have to pick up our game. So I think Australia's economy is already showing itself in a set of new directions. And I think one of them we're going to talk about very shortly will be a fast train.
Just before I sort of move on to the end of the G7 summit, it was obviously a bit of a event for the UK itself, still coming off this these issues with Brexit and the like. And obviously Boris Johnson, the UK Prime Minister, looking to make some deals, I think, as G7 occurred. How do you think it sort of went for the host nation itself?
I think the patient has still not been let out of the intensive care ward. But the vital signs are looking better. COVID is going down. They're making side deals with various European nations. the nation is becoming more stable. It's no learning about a new self that is not dependent, but a little bit more independent. But there are still big hurdles because it is a net producer of services, and it has to get much higher in that game in order to survive in the near future. That means a smarter, faster, better British stock market in London. It means the British providing better aircraft and machinery around the world. It means the British becoming the accountants and kind of cops, as it were, of the world in terms of ethics and the like. So a smarter Britain is going to have to come out of this. And it looks like they know their way.
Mm. And coming to the close of G7, China, I think, still remained the big unanswered question. Biden had to say that China needs to act more responsibly in terms of international norms, human rights, and transparency. Both COVID origins and human rights abuses pressed by the G7 or other members of the G7. And look, for the first time, the G7 communique also referenced Taiwan. But other than kind of giving China a few PR headaches, is there really anything that can be done, any sort of movement on these issues?
Well, the one that really hurt China is the Belt and Road. That project was backed by Europe because that road that they're building, which is a train line and corresponding infrastructure, would bring goods directly, Marco Polo style, from Beijing to London through Afghanistan and the rest. By Europe backing down and backing out of this, this means the Chinese have a big bridge to cross. The Suez Canal is still a stumbling block. Furthermore, the Chinese are no longer welcome in Europe just to spend their money to go to school and buy fashion goods and the like. So I think there's been, a little bit of awakening there on the back foot around the world, including Africa, because of COVID, and Latin America. So they're going to have to walk softly, but they still have the big stick.
Mm. And the much anticipated meeting between Joe Biden and Vladimir Putin has also happened this week, ultimately without, I would say, much fanfare. Both leaders coming away touting mutual respect, a positive dialogue, but in my reading, not really much in the way of results. Ed, what'd you make of it?
Well, being an old State Department hand, we delayed this broadcast so I could listen to more of it. It's very, very good. From my reading of this, they went deep rather than the shallow stuff that was going on with Trump. With Trump, it was a little slap on the back. We're going to work together on these things. And behind doors, we're going to let the Russians run rampant in the American financial markets. Here, it was straight up. Here are the issues. Each of these issues was talked through. So that forms a platform to begin for the guys higher up on the tree than I was, but lower than the president, particularly the Secretary of State, to put their deal-making teams together. I anticipate the first thing that'll happen will be the human thing. American and Russian exchanges of people who were in prison. Both have people they can make those trades with. They'll be done quietly, swiftly. The next thing is this cyber attack stuff is going to start going down. The Russians see these cyber criminals as even threats to themselves. So they'll go after and make a few examples of a few of them. The third thing we'll see is the Russians going a little bit easier on Crimea and the peninsula because they're not getting much from it and they don't want to be in another Afghanistan. So they can go lightly on that and put their gas pipes through to Europe, get their economy moving again. Above all that, kind of the ceiling issues on nuclear and so on, they're just afraid that nuclear bombs will get in the hands of the wrong people, including the Iranians and others. So that'll be top secret negotiations to do that. As I've said, Putin does not command the respect within the country he used to from the military or his people. So he has to win from this and not just be a bully.
Back on the home front, and Joe Biden has told Chuck Schumer to keep the pressure on student debt cancellation, looking to cancel $50,000 of debt for each individual borrower. Some Democrats are insisting Biden could do this via executive order. Biden maintains this is not within his authority. So what does actually keeping the pressure mean, Ed?
Keeping the pressure means making a deal with the Republicans. And also making a deal with the bankers and Wall Street on this debt. Debt is not some hollow thing. If I own an apartment building and you don't pay the rent, I'm in trouble. You say, oh, greedy landlord, but it's the greedy bank. And these are the greedy banks. They want some relief from this. Where's that relief going to come from? Printing more money. So Biden needs a bill or something that incorporates this, the Democrats want, and a few Republicans want, to make this go away.
And we haven't talked many appointments lately, but this week, Linda Khan, a vocal critic of big tech, has been appointed to chair the Federal Trade Commission. Khan has criticized companies such as Amazon, Facebook, and Google for abusing their market power and has demanded government action in the past. This comes as a vow, as part of a vow of Congress to crack down on anti-competitive behavior amongst the biggest tech groups. How significant do you find this appointment, Ed?
She's 32.
Mm.
I was 31. And not at that level, but I was, you know, two steps down from the president. At 31, I knew how to open and close doors, write my name. 32, wow. What a brilliant person, number one. Number two, she has taken an issue that makes everybody mad. The people in the industry, the Republicans, mad about the big techs stealing their thunder, and the little guys mad, blacks, women, and others, about these big techs making zillions of dollars and giving very little in return. So she's obviously clever. And running the Federal Communications, is it Federal FTC or
CFTC? Yeah, the FTC.
FTC is a huge job. The number of sub-agencies and things like this that she's going to have to deal with is enormous. So good on you, kid.
Israel, at long last, has installed its new government, ending Benjamin Netanyahu's 12-year reign in power. Naftali Bennett is the new PM, leading a many-headed hydra of a coalition. But for Palestinians, they're sort of saying meet the new boss, same as the old boss, with more bombing in Gaza and a far-right march in Jerusalem. What's going on?
Well, I think you said Netanyahu's gone for how long? If this government doesn't get its act together and the Palestinians don't give it some breathing room, he will be back. There will be a lot of pressure, again, from the United States, on keeping the bombs down. Now, the only people who win from this are Hamas. So the Palestinian better get your act together, get some strength, see some error on the Taliban it's there, because if you get closed down again, all bets are off. The two-state solution, it's not on the track, but at least the train is moving into that direction.
And in India, you would hope that India was getting on top of that second tidal wave of COVID cases that struck the country over the last few months. Last week, however, we saw a huge spike in reported deaths, underlining fears COVID-19 fatalities may be significantly worse in India than the reported 377,000. Any thoughts, Ed?
Well, first, it's probably double that number. But the other thing is, I'm a little bit surprised at how slow vaccinations are going there. When their companies, as you know, most medicines we use, so they have plenty of capacity here to make medicine, plenty of capacity to deliver. This is mind-boggling to me that they can't get their act together. And they ought to start using some of these other prophylactics and even Chinese and other drugs to get this thing under control. They got nothing to lose. Use Russian, use Chinese, use American, use whatever. They've got to get it under control.
And just finally, Ed, Congress this week voted overwhelmingly to establish Juneteenth as a federal holiday. June 19th commemorates the emancipation of all those enslaved in the United States on the anniversary date of the announcement by Union Army General Gordon Granger proclaiming freedom from slavery in Texas. This is the first new federal holiday created by Congress since 1983. Any thoughts?
Are we going to get voting rights? Please. Juneteenth for voting rights. The Republicans may have been born last night, but they weren't born dumb. They know they now have cover. They could care less about this holiday. What they can say is, we did all we could for those poor black fellows. Please. I'd rather have the vote than a holiday.
Ed and myself will be back next week to discuss all the latest from the land of the free and the home of the brave. Check us out wherever you find the podcast. Maybe drop us a review if you're feeling generous. And we're on Facebook and Twitter as well, US of Ed. And Pacific Conversations is the new podcast from myself, Ed Blakely, and 2SER producer Tina Quinn. Great conversations regarding the relationship between the US and Australia with some really incredible individuals. Check it out, Pacific Conversations, wherever you find good podcasts, and the website edtalks.com.au.